the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yeah, welcome back. It is time once again for more of the show. Let's get the festivities started, shall we? It's another hour of Bucket Strategy Investing. I'm Johnny Dean, got our lead brain trust advisor, and I would say all around decent human being back, Professor Rick Plum, for more. We're here in studio to talk to you about what's important to you. Whatever your money issues are, of course, we're standing by. We're ready to help you out. We've got some lines open for you. A lot of things to talk about this hour. And as I said, we'll be taking your phone calls as we usually do. Lines open, that means that your participation is, of course, mandatory. Our number here in the studio, 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. Of course, as you may know, we do take your phone calls first. So get your money questions ready and you give us a call at that number, 877-PLANNER. As for your emails, you send your questions, your comments here to us at wealthed.com. There's the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page and we will get it here in studio. Answer them as quickly as we can do right here on the program. Brain Trust here, standing by for you. We can do so both on and off the air. I should remind you of that. And we'll keep in mind that the advisors at Lucia Capital Group can help you out with your own individual situation. If you want a personalized bucket strategy or you want to talk to any of the Lucia Capital Group advisors about your money, talk to the professor. Their off-air number at 800-644-1150. They'll set you up with your own bucket strategy. And of course, they've got an entire network of Brain Trust advisors who are ready to advise you on, I would say, just about any situation at all involving your money, your retirement, and all that. Again, off the air, number 800-644-1150. On the air, that's the important number right now, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. Okay, so we have a call, actually a couple of calls and an email. Sometimes the themes get going on this program on paying for college education plans. You were talking, Professor Plum, about the American Opportunity Credit, which can be a big help to people.
Has been to me.
Yeah, and to me too.
My kids.
Well, my daughter, sure. I said last hour, I looked at the refund she's getting. Wow. And I watched it as she was doing her taxes, because I just happened to walk in as she's filling out, and she says, okay, American Opportunity Credit. And so, and all of a sudden, because on TurboTax, like, it has the...
it's like a video poker machine you just won at. You can just see the credits going way up.
Whoa, and she said, whoa. And then so, actually what she did was she told me to thank you, because she wouldn't have known about it if we hadn't talked about it on our show, I happened to mention it.
It's interesting, a lot of people that don't know about it. A couple of years back, I was talking with somebody who isn't a financial advisor, but works in a financial advising company. They work back office type stuff. And they didn't know about it when they were getting their master's, or not their master's, their bachelor's. And they went back and redid 2 years worth of returns and got a refund of $2,500 for each of those years.
Sure. And
they were very appreciative.
And you can do that.
I got nice chocolate chip cookies out of that.
What is it? not necessary, okay?
But rather enjoyed.
I'm sure it was. But you're not soliciting for chocolate chip cookies.
I'm not?
Okay, I'm just covering you, fella. All right? I'm just saying. Anyway, the American Opportunity Credit, just in case for those of you who missed it, can actually wipe out, what is it, up to $1,500 of...
American Opportunity?
Yes.
It's a $2,500 tax credit.
Right, but is it 1,000 of it is refundable?
Yeah, 1,000 of it is refundable, even if you don't owe
$2,500
in taxes. If you don't owe $1,000 in taxes, you can still get back $1,000. So you get to offset $1,500 of actual tax liability and then also get another $1,000 back. Or you can offset $2,500 of actual tax liability if you have actual tax liability of $2,500.
Yeah, so what happens is if you have more than $1,500 of tax liability, it'll wipe all of that out up to a total of $2,500. If it hits zero and you still haven't used all of your $2,500 credit, it'll go below zero up to $1,000.
Not bad, not bad.
It's not bad at all. So anyway, that's the American Opportunity Credit. There are a couple of different things that you can use. But the questions have centered around paying for college and student loans and FAFSA and all that. We will be having a show on this, at least a couple of segments, coming up in another week and a half, something like that, on college savings. But in the meantime, the question could come up as to what do you do about some of these really high student loans that people are having trouble paying? According to Megan Elliott, nearly a quarter of the more than 41 million people, Professor Plum, with student loans are having trouble paying back the debt. This according to Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
That doesn't surprise me. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people that took out student loans where they never even, unfortunately, graduated. And so they never got that job that would give them, hopefully, the income that would be required to pay back the debt.
Yes. Now, you may have heard they have this public service loan forgiveness program, which will kind of, it'll forgive the remaining balance of your loan after you work for a nonprofit or if you work for the government for 10 years.
Yeah, there's certain states have done this for years. I know that back in the 80s, states like Alaska and some other places where you could go set up residency and get a student loan from the state, they would help, you know, basically forgive X percent of the loan if you actually came back after you got your degree and worked in Alaska
yes.
for a series of years. I don't know if Alaska still does that or not, but for that was a while back in the 80s and 90s. And so states have toyed with this idea of, hey, look, if you use that degree to the good of the society or to this specific state or whatever the case may be, we'll help you pay back that loan. We'll help you pay it back by forgiving a portion of it.
Yeah, it's a nice little way to do this. And of course, that's not the only loan forgiveness option out there. Just to list some of these for you folks watching and listening. Volunteering. Now, what they're saying here is that while it's not a strictly a loan forgiveness program, AmeriCorps volunteers are eligible for an education award after they complete their term of service. They say
So that's before you go to school?
Well, they say if you're, well, either before or after, I guess.
Oh, nice.
If you serve full-time for 1 year, you'll receive $5,775, according to this, which can be used to pay off student loans or pay for future educational expenses. Plus, any time you spend serving full-time in AmeriCorps counts toward public service loan forgiveness, so which I wasn't aware of.
What is full-time?
A
40-hour work week?
Don't know. You're going to have to check with AmeriCorps, I guess. If you're an AmeriCorps Vista volunteer and decline the education award in favor of a cash stipend, you may be eligible to have a portion of your Perkins loans canceled. I don't hear much about Perkins loans, but that's what they're saying.
Marlin
Perkins? You're talking about, what was that, Wild Kingdom?
Yeah.
Mutual of Omaha?
Back in the day.
Are they still a mutual company?
Sure.
Okay, fine.
I don't know.
All right, anyway. All right, so volunteering, that is one way to do it. Here's another one. This sort of goes in line with what you were saying as far as loan forgiveness. By the way, 877-PLANNER. If you have any questions on anything, we're still taking your calls. 877-752-6637, any money issue you have. Line's open right now. They say you can pull up stakes. What does that mean? Well, cities and states want to attract young, educated residents, and some are willing to pay off a portion of your student loans to get you to relocate.
Okay, so that's
you said
still
Alaska.
Yeah. Well, that was in the 80s and 90s.
Right. Well, okay, how about this? Niagara Falls, New York. Again, according to this information off of, I think it was Cheat Sheet that sent me this, Niagara Falls, New York will give you nearly $7,000 to pay off your student loans if you agree to live in certain neighborhoods in the city for up to 2 years.
It's true. Okay, well, hey, it helps.
If you move to one of 77 counties in Kansas that's been designated a what they call a rural opportunity zone, you may be able to receive up to $15,000 for your student loans to pay them off.
Not bad.
See, I had no idea.
You got to live in the rural areas of Kansas.
Yeah, but there are certain you know, I mean, you may not mind. Again, Niagara Falls, New York, I mean, that's a city. That's you know, that's a big city.
Been there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I've got family there.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's why you're not there.
If you're in Niagara Falls, you can stop by Fortuna's restaurant if you happen to be listening there.
Jeez.
I don't own it. It's, you know, an in-law of an in-law. But, hey, excellent. I've been there a couple of times. Great Italian food. Fortuna's. I admit that out of the kindness of my heart. I'm not getting paid for that, all right? Okay, so if you want to move, there are certain states that will do that. A couple more here very quickly. You can work in an eligible profession. Now, we mentioned that working for the government or nonprofit is one way toward loan forgiveness, but that's not the only career. Doctors, nurses, veterinarians, dentists, and others who work in the healthcare profession may qualify for loan forgiveness if they work in underserved areas.
Right, instead of going to the big, you know, prestigious hospitals and
sure.
Boston General or whatever, you go to some of the more rural, smaller areas.
Yes, that's what they say. Forgiveness may also be available for teachers and lawyers. In New York, Young farmers, and I don't know how they define that, but they say young farmers can have up to $50,000 in student loans wiped out. Firefighters, police officers, and even some librarians may have their Perkins loans forgiven. So these are just a couple of different ways. And there are a few others. If you serve in the military, you know, the Army has a college loan repayment program. They can repay up to $65,000 in loans. Again, you can have some of your Perkins loans discharged. If you work, oh, here's one. Attention, if you work for a generous employer.
Well, that's becoming the newest fringe benefit
it
perk.
It is, that's right. PricewaterhouseCoopers, they rolled out this kind of a benefit last year, and Fidelity also announced something similar. Employees who've worked at Fidelity for at least 6 months, according to this, will get $2,000 a year toward their loans, up to $10,000. Hey, it's a perk. I'd take it. Okay, 877-PLANNER. We got a lot more to talk about. We got some emails to get to. Your phone calls will come first, so give us a call. Lines are open right now, 877-PLANNER. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, The Brain Trust, coming right back. Dandy, candy?
Dandy.
Okay. Not quite faces, but that's all right. We'll accept it for today.
It's not time.
What?
Faces.
We already had it.
But it's usually at the end of the hour.
Well, so no, I know, but
we're not looking forward to it again.
We're not going to do it twice.
I could use it.
Okay. All right, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. Does that mean we can play Starbuck again?
I didn't like it the first time.
Well, there's something wrong with you then.
But I'll tell you what. That's never been a question.
Well, I understand that. But now, as far as the money advice goes, I want to remind people, because I haven't done this for a little while, big changes coming to Social Security, Social Securita. And I should mention this because we have on our Facebook page a downloadable guide put together in part by Professor Rick Plum that talks about, guess what, the big changes coming to Social Security. Actually, a lot of them are already here. And a couple of deadlines, or at least one anyway, that needs to be met by a certain subset of people.
The other one's already passed.
The other one's already passed, and the rest of us have already been aced out. But if you want to learn about these changes with Social Security, how they may or may not affect you, you can go to our Facebook page, Wealth Ed. If you're on Facebook, search Wealth Ed. You'll find it there. It's one of the links at the very top. Click on that. You can download it for free and learn all about these changes. Again, it's a quick read, 5-6 minutes, something like that. And you'll realize that it really isn't as complicated or dire as a lot of people were making this out to be. Did you ever read that? You had something, Professor Plum, that said some people could take advantage to the tune of $50,000 or something.
$117,000. It was a book they were selling, and I can't figure out what they're talking about. They were talking also about how doing a combination of benefits could get somebody, a married couple, 64% more money. And like, well, what they're talking about is 32% more for one person and 32% more by letting both of them grow until 70.
Oh, so you're saying doing the old
doing what you used to be able, making sure you were still eligible for it.
Yeah, okay.
And like they had some trick to make you eligible if you weren't otherwise eligible. Now, I mean, for somebody who is, you know, 66 now or will be 66 before the end of April, who is not receiving their benefit and who is not age 70 yet, and who is not looking to take a benefit from their spouse, they should be doing something right now. But that's a fairly tight, you know, subset of people.
Yeah, there are a lot of ifs, as this, if this, then that, and you have to do this, and you have to do that. Again, as you said, most people who should be doing something by the deadline have already done it.
Hopefully.
Yeah. So anyway, download that guide. It's there. Right there at our Facebook page. And, of course, it's free, as is everything that we do right here, including the phone calls, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. We got some lines open, so ask your money questions of the Brain Trust right now, 877-752-6637. Emails at wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com. Celeste in Florida, I'm divorced. And at least I could get out of that, and the least I could get out of that horrible marriage was the 10-year spousal benefit. Okay. I'm confused about the recent changes, speaking of which. Can I still get the spousal benefit?
Well, when the changes were first written into law, they, I think, had the unintended consequence of potentially screwing up ex-spousal benefits, letting an ex-spouse be very vindictive to a potentially lower-wage-earning ex-spouse. Luckily, either Congress or the Social Security Administration on its own came out and said, no, we are not going to let that happen. We are not going to have this new rule have any impact on the ex-spousal rules. So they didn't change the ex-spouse's rules in any way, shape, or form. They did not change the deemed, you know, side of things for the ex-spouses. You will still be able to do the, assuming that you're at least 62 years of age,
right?
You know, you will be able to get the ex-spousal benefits just like you could before.
Yeah, so whether or not the ex decides, hey, I'm going to suspend my benefits when I turn 66, and therefore you can't get any benefits because that's what the new rules say, they've made sure, they made it clear that for ex-spouses this isn't the case.
But if you're not 62 years of age and you wanted to wait until age 70 to take your own, and then take a spousal benefit from 66 to 70, they did take that away from
you. Yes, they did. They did. And you can check our guide for more information on that. Okay, back to the phone lines. We dropped a couple calls, so give us a call back. We now have four lines open. 877-PLANNER. Let's go next then to Sam in Sacramento, California. Hi, Sam.
Hello, yes. I'm very confused as to when I can when I can withdraw money from the Roth IRA.
Okay.
I understand there's the 5-year rule, but is it from the money that I put into that amount of money that I put, say, today, does that have to stay there for 5 years? So every time I put in money, I have to stay for 5 years? Or is it just from the beginning of the Roth?
Well, there's actually 2 5-year rules. And the one that you're alluding to is the rule for earnings. Now, how old are you, Sam?
I am 60.
60.
Correct.
When did you start the very first Roth IRA that you have?
3 years ago.
Okay, 3 years ago, 2014, 2013?
Yeah.
So you have 5 tax years from the very first tax year to be able to wait until you can take what's known as a qualified distribution. It is from the very first IRA. When we're talking about the earnings, you have to be 59.5 and 5 years from the very first tax year. So if you made your first contribution in 2013, you've got 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. Once you get to 2018, then every distribution from any Roth IRA in your name will be a qualified distribution because you are at least 59.5 and you've had a Roth IRA, any Roth IRA continuously for at least 5 tax years. So you are going to be good to go in 2018. Now, do you need to take any money out before then?
Well, no. I have my 401k, and my plan was to start moving money into the Roth.
Okay.
So that's why I was kind of confused as to, you know, between the money that I put in from my payroll into Roth IRA versus the conversion.
Well, the conversion has a different 5-year rule, but now that you're 60, more than 59.5, the conversion 5-year rule doesn't have any effect on you. The conversion 5-year rule is only in place if a distribution of converted principal is withdrawn before 59.5, because what they're looking at is that there's a premature distribution from your IRA. So you know that if you take money out of an IRA before 59.5, there's a 10% penalty. Well, they're basically saying you cannot convert to a Roth IRA and then pull money out of the Roth IRA because you've already paid taxes on the conversion. If you do that within 5 years, you get a 10% penalty. But they're not going to apply a penalty to a Roth distribution that you wouldn't have had from the traditional IRA anyway. The penalty for the conversions goes away at 59.5, regardless of how many years you've had it. The penalty or the earnings issue is still a 5-year and 59.5. 5 years and disabled, 5 years and unfortunately passed away, or one of these other exemptions to the rules. So the conversions before 59.5 carry a 5-year rule. Each conversion has a 5-year rule. You don't have to worry about that because you're 59.5. Earnings, 5 years from the very first tax year of the Roth IRA that you had.
Yeah. Hey, Sam, I'll tell you what, if you have some more questions, I just have to take a break here. So please hold on and we can explain this further. In fact, I'm going to have you talk a little bit about what these Roth 5-year rules mean and 59 and a half, converted principal or a contributed principal, whatever it is. So hold on, Sam, if you have some more questions, we will be happy to talk to you more on the other side. We still have four lines open, so call us now, 877-PLANNER. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group, coming right back. Don't go away. There we go. You can talk about anything you want on this program as long as it has to do with your money. We're here to help you out. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, taking your calls. We're going to tell you just a little bit where you can meet the Brain Trust coming up here, in the not too distant future. And I would say very, very soon. So stick around for that. More of your emails coming up as well. We're going to talk, perhaps if we have time, about some of the different five-year rules that there are for Roth IRAs when you have conversions and you have contributions and all that stuff. We were just talking with our previous caller, Sam, about that. But want to get a couple more calls through the pipe here. Again, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Maureen is up next in Las Vegas. Hi, Maureen.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you today?
I'm great. I just have a quick question. I'm 66 years old, and I started taking my Social Security at 62. Now, I was married for 10 years. Is it too late for me now to try to go after my ex-husband's Social Security?
Well, he's still alive, right?
Yes.
How much are you receiving from Social Security right now?
$1,500.
Yeah, you're not going to get anything from his because your benefit is a lot higher than the spousal benefit is that you would otherwise be entitled to. So your benefit's a lot larger. Now, if his benefit is larger than yours and something happens to him, and basically he dies, then you can go and collect the larger benefit that he was receiving at that point. So you could step up to a bigger benefit at that point.
Do you know how much she, excuse me, I'm sorry, let me interrupt. Do you know how much she's made, he gets, Maureen, your ex-husband?
I think he gets about $2,550 or
right,
$2,600. He gets the max.
Okay, so when he passes away, if he passes before you do, you can apply for an ex-spouse's survivor benefit and step up to the $2,500, $2,600 that he was receiving when he died.
I see. Okay, so right now,
you're getting
I would have at 60,
You're getting as much as you can get.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Yeah, and Maureen, one thing too, by the way, when you mentioned that she could get it, she can't be married at that time later on when he dies, right?
If you were still single.
Are you having any plans of getting married, in the near future?
No, not never again.
Oh, never again. Well, then there you go. Well, Professor made that leap. Okay. So if never again, then once he's gone, you will be able to, assuming the benefit, which I guess will still be higher than hers.
It'll be higher than hers.
At that time, you can jump up to his
higher benefit.
All right. Well, we don't want to wish anything bad.
No, we don't want, but it is there for you. It is there for you. But right now, your benefit that you're getting is higher than what his spousal benefit would be for you.
All right. Well, I sure appreciate your time.
Okay, Maureen, thank you for calling. Thank you for asking that, too. So
she took hers at 62, so her full retirement age benefit would have been about $2,000 a month. She's receiving more than the spousal benefit would have been. The spousal benefit would have been a maximum of $1,200, $1,300 a month. And so she's getting a lot more than that. So she gets the higher of the two benefits.
Right.
She's getting the higher of the two benefits already.
Now, you knew that before we even knew how much her husband was getting, because the maximum spousal benefit currently right now,
in the $1,330, $1,340 range.
That's right. That's the most anybody can get.
And she was already receiving $1,500, and she took it early.
Yes.
So that's more than the spousal benefit's going to be. But it is not as much as a potential survivor benefit will be if something does happen to him before her.
No, because what happens is on a survivor benefit, in her case, because he's getting more, she will jump up to his.
Right.
Now
she first off has to know that he's passed away. It's
going
to be automatic.
No, they won't come looking for you.
Now, the good thing and or the bad thing, depending on how you want to look at it, is if he's remarried and he has a spouse that's receiving a benefit from him, and then he dies, his spouse will step up to the survivor benefit. And it has no impact on what Maureen will get. And what Maureen gets as an ex-spouse surviving benefit will have no impact on what his current spouse will get. They get the same number, going forward. So she can't impact a new spouse. either on a good side or a bad side. She gets hers.
Yeah, it's a nice thing. It's not like a pension where it'll be reduced for some people, or, you know, there's a finite amount of money that's being spent.
Right. It's not like you share a benefit.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't work that way. Now, again, a spousal benefit is calculated differently than a survivor benefit.
Yep.
A spousal benefit is based on the worker's
full retirement
age. It's always based
on the worker's full retirement age. Then it's reduced if the spouse is under full retirement age when they apply.
Right.
A widow's benefit or widower's benefit is based on what the person was receiving when they died, and then reduced if the survivor is under full retirement
age. So the starting point for both, the starting point for the spousal benefit is full retirement age, and then it is reduced if we turn to the spouse who wants to collect. On the survivor benefit, it starts with whatever age that person was, whatever that person was receiving when they passed away, or if they weren't receiving yet, it's what it would have been had they started receiving that month.
It depends on whether they died before they got to their full retirement age or after. If they died before their full retirement age and were not receiving a benefit, it goes off the full retirement age benefit.
So it can't be lower than that.
If they are after full retirement age but are not receiving their own benefit up till age 70, it goes on what they would have received the month they died, if they had applied the month they died.
Yeah, so if you have a spouse who's, say, 67, 68, and a spouse who dies at age 62, the person at age 68 would be able to receive the age 62 spouse that died would be able to receive their full retirement age benefit.
What? No. The 62-year-old is going to have it reduced.
No. The 62-year-old is the one who died.
Oh, the 62-year-old died.
68 survived.
Okay, yeah. 68. Right. Well, no. Well, then the 62-year-old is not receiving a benefit?
No.
Yeah, so they get the 66
benefit currently.
Soon to be 66 in 2 months.
Yeah, starting next year. Yeah, 2017. That's going to be a whole other mess that I'm not looking forward to. But hey, you know, that's the way it is. All right, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Let's move along. I don't have time to get into the arm. Oh, no, you know what? No, I'll save that. I'll save the five-year rule for the Roth. I want to get to Alan in Broomfield, Colorado, email. He says, I have the following... two 401ks from two previous employers, one IRA, and one Roth IRA. According to required minimum distribution rules, must I initiate the RMD from each one of them? That's question one. Also, what is the latest I have to take my RMD without penalty? Great questions on the RMD, Professor Plum.
Well, you do not have to initiate a required minimum distribution from your Roth IRA. There is no required minimum distribution from a Roth IRA where you're the owner of the Roth IRA. Beneficiaries, yes, they have a required minimum distribution. Now, you do have a separate, distinct, required minimum distribution for each of the remaining three accounts. You have two separate 401ks from two separate employers. Each one has its own required minimum distribution. And you have IRAs. The IRAs have their own separate, distinct, required minimum distribution for your IRAs. Now, you can mix and match the IRAs if you have more than one IRA, but you cannot take extra money out of the IRA and have it satisfy the required minimum distribution from the 401k. You can't take a large distribution from one of the 401ks and have it qualify as the required minimum distribution from the IRA. You do need to take a distribution from each of those categories, each individual, different company IRA, or a 401k, and your IRA pool of money as well. Now, when do you have to take them? Well, it depends on whether this is your very first required minimum distribution or subsequent required minimum distributions. If you are turning 70 and a half this year, 2016, you have to take a required minimum distribution for 2016. You have a 2016 required minimum distribution, but you have until April 1st of next year to take that required minimum distribution. But even if you take it in January, February, March of 2017, it's still your 2016 required minimum distribution. And the fact that you took money out of your IRA, your 401k, whatever account it was, in 2017 doesn't necessarily mean that you're taking a 2017 required minimum distribution. That was your 2016. You still have another required minimum distribution for 2017 from each of those accounts. So you can postpone the very, very first required minimum distribution until April 1st of the following year. Now, if you're still working for either one or both of those companies that have 401ks, and you don't own 5% or more of the company, you do not have a required minimum distribution from that employer's 401k where you're still working. But you will have a required minimum distribution in the year you retire. And that one is your first one from that account, which can be postponed until April 1st of the following year.
Yeah, it's a little service they provide to you.
April 1?
Yeah, the April 1. You know, if you forget, whatever,
you're not used to it.
You didn't know, whatever it is.
Because the penalty is fairly high.
Yes. Yeah, and by the way, it's the year you turn age 70 and a half. So if you turn age 70 and a half in late December, any money that you take out of your IRA or 401k, even if you did it in January for whatever reason, if it's enough to satisfy the required minimum distribution, even though you took it at age, virtually age 69 and a half, it'll still count as your required minimum distribution.
That'll be my situation because my birthday is at the end of June. My 70 and a half is the end of December.
That's it. So if you take money out January 2nd.
I'm only 69, but it qualifies as RMD for that year.
As RMD for 70 and a half. That's right. All you got, they're going to look back at the year and say, did you take that amount of money out? Yes, you did. Well, then it's been satisfied. Okay, those are the rules. Any other questions? Give us a call, 877-PLANNER. Another segment is just ahead. Some trivia, phone calls, and emails still to come on Bucket Strategy Investing. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. A little housekeeping here before we get back to the calls and the emails. By the way, 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Last chance for me to remind you, folks in Portland, Oregon, and the surrounding areas, Tigard and all the way around to Eugene and the entire state of Oregon is going to join the Brain Trust there in Tigard/Portland tomorrow. This is a last chance to sign up. Actually, you can just show up if you want, but we prefer you to sign up at wealthed.com. Tell us you're coming. We'll set the chairs out for you and meet Professor Plum and Terry Keyes and the local advisors there in Portland to talk about retirement income strategies. So again, Portland tomorrow. Love to see you there. And don't forget, Houston, Texas, and Santa Clara are coming up in April. So if you check wealthed.com, wealthed.com, sign up there. It's all free, of course. So that's tomorrow. Coming up Monday. This is something that alternative investments. Now we're going to tread carefully on alternative investments on Monday, because I tell you what, we could get into the weeds on this and we won't. But when we're talking about alternative investments, what we really refer to are anything besides stocks, bonds, and cash. Now, most people only look at stocks, bonds, and cash. I shouldn't say most, many only look at stocks, bonds, and cash for their portfolio, figuring one does one thing, one does the other, and cash sort of balances it all out. But if you're not at least considering, many people, if you're not considering alternative investments, you could be doing a disservice to you and your portfolio. How? Well, we're going to tell you about it on Monday, what sort of alternative investments you might consider. And by the way, who should or should not consider those for their portfolios. So that's coming up Monday on this program. Again, 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. Email's coming up. But trivia time, how am I going to do this one here? Let's see. A lot of numbers on this. But this comes from Realty Track. All right. Lenders foreclosed, I'm going to say, on 450,000 homes back in 2015. A total that is up 37% from 2014's total foreclosures of 327,000. But 2015's total is less than half of the number of foreclosures that occurred in calendar year 2010. Now, they gave numbers on that, but there's too many numbers. So here's the deal, Professor Plum. According to Realty Track, there were 37% more foreclosures in 2015 than there were in 2014.
It's a nice little jump.
But let's see. Less than half of the number that occurred in 2010, which you would expect. Now, why do you suppose there were more foreclosures in 2015 than there were in 2014?
We were talking about this earlier, and had the great idea that maybe it was 7-1 arms or 6. You know.
My guess is that some of these 7-1 arms that they came up with were coming due. The balloon payment came up. Maybe some folks, you know, who did this in 2006, 7, and 8, maybe they made the payment for a little while, but they just decided they couldn't do it. And the foreclosure process takes a while.
And maybe they were also looking at the fact that they did the house in 2005. and it was a 10-year interest only, which was very popular back then. And they were hoping upon hopes that the value of the house would get back to where it was before so they could refinance it.
Yeah, and it didn't happen.
It didn't happen because housing prices are still not necessarily all the way back to where they were in 2005.
No. And I've heard a lot of criticism of these interest-only loans. I personally don't find anything necessarily wrong with them, except for the fact that your payment is going to change once you get to
at the end of the period.
Yeah, at the end of the period, which is oftentimes 10 years or 12 years or something like that. Because now all of a sudden, instead of just paying interest, you're paying principal too, added principal. That
and
actually has to start being paid out.
And it's amortized over a 20-year period of time instead of a 30-year period of time.
Yes, which creates, in most cases, in fact, in all cases that I've seen, a much bigger payment.
Much higher, yes.
Much bigger payment. But the criticism I've seen toward interest-only loans has been that, well, why would you only pay interest? Why would you ever want to do that? That you're not getting any equity, you're not paying down any equity out of your home. Well, it's interest that you're going to pay anyway. You're just leaving the principal section off of it.
Yeah, it's a little more in interest than you would have paid anyway, because if you're amortizing it, you're paying less interest over time because the balance is going down. So the payments, you know,
well,
you're paying less interest over
time. You are,
time.
Except I would say when you're in the first years of the loan, that balance that's coming down isn't having a huge effect on the amount of interest that you're paying.
Yeah, but it is some.
It is some, but it's almost, to me, it's almost negligible. But I'm not going to say it really is. All right, 877-PLAN. All right, some folks on hold. I want to get to Bruce. Okay, Bruce, before the top of the hour in Minnesota somewhere. Bruce, thanks for calling. How can we help you today? Yeah, hello.
I just got, I didn't realize I was going to be on.
Oh.
On television. I'll get a reverb if I get by the television. So, my question is, got a letter from the IRS here just before the year that my Social Security was being cut back because I made too much money. My wife and I both took a hit on our Social Security. I'm 78 and she's 74. And I had a small business that I sold to my daughter, and I'm picking some money up off of that. And I just...
You're wondering why it was less or what?
Why my Social Security is being cut back.
Well, I mean, it's not going to make you happy, but your Social Security didn't change at all. What changed was your Medicare premium. And because your income 2 years ago must have gone over $170,000 of adjusted gross income. Am I in the right ballpark?
No. I don't think I've ever had a $170,000 gross income or adjusted gross.
So that's the only reason that would affect your Social Security, the net check that you're receiving, is that your income went up too high. I would go back and look at my income. Now, you sold your business. Did you sell it? Did it show up on paper as a taxable event, even though you may not have received the money? I mean, you did sell it to your daughter.
I sold it to my daughter on a contract for deed, essentially, and I get an income of probably, well, 35 times 9, 3,500 a month times 9, and I have other investments, but... I'm just curious why my Social Security got cut back.
I don't know why. I'd have to see the letter. Yeah. The only thing I can come up with is the Medicare premium.
I'll tell you what, hang on a second, Bruce. I'm not sure. We're out of time for the hour, so hold on a second. Maybe we can get a couple more details off the air really quick. I know you got to go. But hang on a second, Bruce, all right, because I got to end the hour here. If you need the brain trust off the air, talk to Professor Rick Plum or any of the advisors from Lucia Capital Group. They're available to you. Just call them at their off-air number, 800-644-1150. For Professor Rick Plum, I'm Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.